Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
3, 2, 1. The Force Awakens or Top Gun Maverick? Force Awakens, I've seen it more times. Barbie or Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer.
Tim Burton or Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson.
Jake Gyllenhaal or Ryan Gosling?
Gosling.
The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi?
Sorry, it's Return of the Jedi.
No, actually, it's Empire Strikes Back. Roger Deakins or Emmanuel Lubezki?
Emmanuel Lubezki.
A Negroni or a cup of tea?
Quick!
And we're live for episode 99.
It really startled me for a second. I don't know why.
It's me.
I did the classic on the phone the other day because two letters in my postcode are D and P. And instead of saying, like, you know, Delta Papa or any normal one, I went Phenomenon Django.
Phenomenon Django.
Yeah.
Introducing Phenomenon Django.
And the guy on the phone was, I was like, sorry, is that all right? He's like, yeah, I got it. I know exactly what you mean. It's like D and P. He's like, yeah, I got you.
Hi, we are Phenomenon Django. And Django. This is our new single.
We're gonna push it up.
Crystal Dust. Yeah.
Like piercing through the lip.
We're Phenomenal Django. Get us on the blockchain.
Yeah.
This is Blockchain Terry.
Yeah. It doesn't help that, like, the word phonetics is with a PH. It's just like...
It's Papa, isn't it, for P?
Papa. Yeah, and Delta is...
Is D.
Is it Delta?
Yeah, it's
Detroit.
Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Echo, Foxtrot,
Golf,
Hotel,
Indigo,
Jupiter, Kilo,
Lima,
Mango,
no.
No, it's... Mike.
November.
Oscar. Papa.
Quebec.
It's not Quebec, surely.
It is Quebec.
Is it?
Yeah.
Quebec. Not, yeah, I suppose what else could it be? I mean, Queen. Yeah. Quebec. Ringo? Ringo.
No, it's not Ringo.
River.
R is.
Ooh. Roger. Oh. Roger. Surely it's Roger. Roger.
What's it need to forget about Alfred? R is Romeo.
Oh, Romeo.
Quebec,
of course,
is right.
Let me get it.
Okay, I've got them now.
S is
Mac OS.
Sierra.
Yeah.
T would be
Ice Blast.
Tango.
U
would be uniform.
Yeah.
W would be whiskey.
Yes.
V.
X.
X. Where's V? You've
gone
past V.
Oh, sorry.
You're right. Vertigo.
Victor.
Victor, of course. Yeah. Victor, whiskey. X would be...
of course.
X-ray.
Yeah.
And Y would be...
They saved us in the war.
Yankee.
Yeah.
Well, they came late.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
it has to be said
if you want to get into it. And zebra.
No, Zulu.
Zulu. Yeah, that makes sense, because otherwise zebra and zebra. That's why they wouldn't use zebra or zebra, because there's two different pronunciations.
Yeah.
Interesting, slightly militaristic opening to the show today.
Lots of
apologies to our American listeners. You're obviously welcome. It's a long time ago. We've all forgotten it. Don't worry about it.
We have new problems around the
new
world.
New problems to distract us. This is episode 99. What other things came out in 99? 1999, The Matrix. Fight Club. The Millennium Bug. Y2K.
Sixth Sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And... One more, James. Let's do one more 1999.
That Y2K, if there was a Y2K equivalent happening now, that'd be fun. Wouldn't be fun. We have those every month, actually.
The world's going to end.
Every day.
Every day.
Do you know what? It would happen and it would be gone in like a week. Everyone would be talking about it.
Last week it was bed bugs. This week it's going to be something else. I heard Y2K is happening. Nobody loves Y2K more than me. I say yes, 2K. I don't ask why.
Yes, 2K.
I've got all the keys.
Well, welcome. And we're going to be reviewing a film today. James has gone to the cinema. Good on you.
Yeah.
Because you remembered that we have a film podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But we will put out a bonus this week as well, which is that we've noticed that a couple of emails have asked for a Bear season 2 review, a belated Bear season 2 review. I have finished it now, and I will be saying my thoughts in a bonus episode that will be coming later this week. Just a short, sweet one.
Before we get into official business, I had a new violation of cinema. It's surprising. I've not seen it before. Large Domino's pizza. Just cracked it open. I remember I saw this person walk in with a large Pepsi and a massive Domino's.
Were they quiet eating it?
Yeah, they were quiet eating it, and I feel mixed on it because in one hand, in a multiplex, I'm like, firstly, I was under the understanding you couldn't just bring that quantity of hot food into a multiplex.
Because the cinema
I thought even like bringing my own bag of Maltesers was a bit on the line. Yeah. Like if someone saw it, you'd get away
with
it.
Where'd you get those?
But they'd be like, you've been scanned by the CCTV and there'll be a picture of my face in the office next to a bag of Maltesers. But I thought that was kind of the understanding.
Don't let him in.
Yeah. If he brings minstrels, that's okay, but no more Maltesers. Yeah. He can buy ours. And I think hot food, because at an Everyman, you can order a pizza. So if it's okay there, does the setting change the rules of the cinema?
Was the smell offensive? What flavour was it? Pepperoni?
They walked in like, they weren't sitting that near me. But enough for me to notice.
I think it shouldn't be done. I mean, I saw a film at the Prince Charles Cinema once and some guy walked out and came back in with a full curry.
Yeah, like, that's straight away not allowed.
I mean, this is Soho on a Friday night at like 10 o'clock. So.
You're not getting a good curry there.
No. I think it's a
burger and chips and a pizza and every man.
Well, I'm not though. I don't like that. I hate that. Because this idea that, you need to consume
a full meal
at
that little table.
Also, it's distracting for you. You're not concentrating on the film as much. And it is distracting for patrons if you're sat there. Imagine me watching Killers of the Flower Moon, De Niro's like, what happened to you in the war?
I watched Elemental.
And stuff.
But everyone was doing it. And it's like, this is all going to happen.
What if they jumped off a bridge, James, would you do it as well?
Yeah.
every school teacher says. Do you remember that from school?
Yeah, of course, yeah. If they jumped off the bridge, would you do it too?
I remember the first time a teacher floored me with that logic and I was like, whoa, that is really smart.
It's morals like that that are going to be like the final realization of the film Wonka. It's going to be like, treat people with kindness.
Oh, you think so?
Be nice.
Oh, speaking of Wonka, we actually, because of the director, Paddington 3 announced.
Yes.
Paddington in Peru. November 2024.
Wow.
I'm going on tour, Uncle Pastuzzo.
Uncle Pastuzzo. Uncle Pastuzzo will have written, like, I wish you could go here, and he'll be following in the trails.
The marmalade thing. And Antonio Banderas is in it, apparently. And I could see it now. It'll be, hello, Bear. I want to kill you,
Maybe
Bear.
He's Uncle Pastuzzo doing flashbacks.
No, because he was played by Michael Pastuzzo. No, he was played by Michael Gambon. And so so both on screen and off screen.
What was the aunt's name? No, there.
Aunt Lucy.
Do you think she's going to eat it in the third one?
They're going to get us. I think she's going to pop her head above and it's going to get blown clean off.
Grant with a shotgun.
Guess who's back?
Merry Christmas.
Paddington back in the jungle. It's basically going to be Rambo, but it's just Paddington. And at the end of it, he loses his taste
for
marmalade.
I need to kill everybody.
He loses his taste for marmalade and he's just like, just rips someone's. Basically,
he can't taste marmalade anymore.
At the end of it, he attacks Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant and it's like a nice crossover.
Yeah,
it's him growing up. And it's
like, that'd be a brilliant reveal. And we now watch back one and two and the seeds have been there the whole time.
And you go back and watch The Revenant and he's got marmalade dripping from his mouth. Yeah. Like, this time it's personal.
Alejandro Iñárritu was talking about this for decades before we show.
So that's coming out next year.
Yeah. Well, no,
it's coming out. Wonka's coming out at Christmas.
Soon,
And I think that could really go either way. Every time I see the trailer, I go, walking a real line there.
It's so sickly sweet that I could criticize it. The problem is that shit has worked.
Yeah.
And I can't sit here and be like, it's not going to work on me. Because there's a very strong chance I'm going to see it.
It has the Paddington touch about it, the twinkly touch.
Yeah.
But I'm worried that if it, like a studio's come in and gone, do the Paddington thing. Do it with Timothy.
Yes.
Do it for Wonka.
With his beautiful face. And there's like the evil corporates in the room being I think he likes the poor.
Yeah. But I also love the fact that they've cast Matt Lucas and Matthew Boynton and Patson Joseph. And I'm like, that's really well done. Anyway,
That's yet to come. We got. Oh, by the way, actually, sorry. Just
sorry, housekeeping.
Just looking ahead. Loads of films between now and the end of the year.
Films everywhere. Turns out there's films everywhere.
Lots of interesting little ones sprouting up now.
Yeah, I forgot about Foe, and here it is.
Yeah, boom. Yeah. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Foe.
Just want to give everyone a reminder who is listening. Next week is our 100th episode. Some of you have been sending some really, really good voice notes that I'm very excited to read out. But this is your last chance. If this goes out on a Wednesday, you have until Saturday.
You have until Saturday of this week.
Saturday this week to send us in voice notes to be a part of the show. I've loved some of them already. There's some really good questions. But now is your last chance to get them in. Ask us a question. Be on the show. Keep it short. Keep it sweet. But it's going to be a very, very fun episode.
You're not going to get in trouble. It's going to be fine.
And can't wait for the quiz.
Exactly. And we will report back to the rest of the listeners about what it was like.
Yes, we'll do a debrief. But you can follow us at Pop Kitchen Podcast on all the socials to see the shenanigans from the big Pop Kitchen 100 quiz. But yes, that's just a little bit of housekeeping. On with the show.
Guys, it's Halloween season, and what better way to celebrate than with a horror film? Catch some of the latest horror blockbusters, as well as some creepy classics, on the big screen at Vue.
Experience classic Halloween favourites returning to the big screen, including It, cult vampire classic The Lost Boys, and family favourite Hocus Pocus. Or check out some brand new horror movies, such as Five Nights at Freddy's, The Exorcist, Believer, and Saw 10.
Treat yourself to the ultimate Halloween big screen experience from just $4.99 at selected Vue venues when booked online at myvue.com.
So I'm very much in the middle of a not watching trailers moment of my life, which I don't think will last because it's not really possible. But I have this normal instinct when I'm presented with a film that I'm not overtly familiar with to like Google the trailer. And instead of doing that, I've kind of just been like, I know this film exists. I'm just going to go see it. I know like the very sort of broad things.
Yeah.
It's not going to last because when I went to go see my film, I saw trailers for more films.
Ah.
And I like saw a trailer. My first time seeing a trailer for Priscilla. Because I told you when I watched Priscilla, I hadn't seen the trailer, but I was very much like, this trailer does nothing for me. You have no power here. I've already seen the film, which is great. Comes out in January.
Oh, it was a long time ago.
Oh. And I was like, well, I've already seen it. And I saw the cast, Paul Mescal, Saoirse Ronan, which is, can I say for both of us, big draws for us both wanting to go and see a film.
Yep.
And I thought, great cast, rumblings of sci-fi. Mm. Love it. I'm going to do a very light touch on the plot because I don't want to spoil it in case people do want to go and see it.
Because I think it's got a very limited release.
At the multiplex I booked at, there was only one screening a day, which I thought was quite telling, considering, again, the caliber of the cast.
Mm.
Maybe that's just us in our own little bubble of like wanting to go and see lots of films. But I thought, oh, never mind. And for a film like this, that factor of me not knowing that much going into it, I think should really work in its favour.
Mm-hmm.
But it did quite a lot to not impress me the more and more it went on.
Oh.
And so it's set in a scorched planet Earth in 2065, 40 odd years in the future.
Okay.
Earth is in drought. Food and water are very scarce. And most of the American Midwest, where this film is set, is deserted. The foliage is barren. They have to endure very interstellar-esque dust storms.
Mm-hmm.
And they live in this sort of like old school farmhouse, like Interstellar again. Mm-hmm. And so despite the futuristic setting, the two main characters that we follow in this live in a very old school analog house, like you wouldn't know that it was set in the future. It's almost like, you know, there's no sort of Minority Report-esque future about this. It's sort of very analog and traditional. We have Junior, played by Paul Mescal, and Henrietta, or Hen, played by Saoirse Ronan. And they're living together, and they're in this very challenging environment. They're definitely close, they're definitely in love, but, you know, they have tensions, and they live in this sort of difficult environment. You can see that it's sort of a relationship that has its ups and downs. In the middle of the night, they are awoken by the sound of a car driving up to the house. It's quite interesting. It's a futuristic car. It's the first sense of, it's like if you've seen like the Tesla Cybertruck, it kind of looks like that, but like in a coupe, and it's self-driving. And it's actually the first sense that like, oh, maybe beyond this countryside, there's like a grander future, futuristic thing more happening. A man knocks at the door named Terrence, who's played by Aaron Pierre. And I'll say there's only three actors in this film, apart from a few extras. It's a three-piece.
Got it.
All the way through.
Very stripped down then.
Very much so. And he knocks on the door and he's sort of met with hostility from Paul Mescal, who like grabs his gun because it's, you know, kind of post-apocalypse. Yeah. You don't really know what's going to happen. And he's very softly spoken and he asks, is it okay if I come in and speak to you both? And he names them through the doors like, I know you guys live here. And he basically sits them down and tells them that there's this amazing news that they have been selected to be part of a group of people who qualify to join this new community in outer space on a satellite that's in orbit around planet Earth. And it's this idea that Earth is in a very bad way. It's becoming inhabitable. Mm. It's not great. And there's sort of this idea that for the human race to survive, we're going to take people up into the satellite. They can live in this Wall-E-esque style okay. community until like Earth, until they can fix Earth. It's very vague, but it's like we're basically taking people up. So in case everything goes bad. He then actually clarifies and says, you know, I'm very sorry. I should have been clear. It's actually just you, Junior. And he points at Paul Mescal. Only you've been selected to go up to this colony on a satellite.
Seems a bit mean.
And they're like, that's what they think. They're a bit like, you know, you can F off. And Terrence reminds them of the sort of the idea of conscription from the old wars where, you know, it wasn't really up to you. You have to sort of go to do your part, you know, given that he's got special skills as a farmer. And it's quite vague as to why he's been chosen, but nevertheless, he's been chosen. And the film is confronting this idea of that decision with this relationship and how it affects them over the course of a year, right? And I'm not going to go too much into what happens next, because if you're going to go see it, you should find that out for yourself. And so in essence, you've got a couple of very big sci-fi ideas, like end of the world, colonies in space, survival of the human race, but it's explored on a very small canvas of one relationship, and it doesn't deviate out of the house that they live in the local community that they get. So it's basically telling it in a very small scale. And even though the film hangs on an interesting dynamic and a development on where how this is going to happen and where it's going to go, for me, watching it, it just never jumped off the page. I found the dialogue very ineffective, very scripty. I think my main thing was that I felt like the actors, it was like the first take of the day. You know what it's like? You've read it and you're performing it, but we're saying lines to each other.
The juices aren't flowing.
The juices just aren't flowing. I had a lot of scenes for me feeling very superfluous and not needed. So within about 15 minutes, I'd kind of realised this film just wasn't working for me, which is a shame because it's beautifully shot and there's great actors in it. Like there are a couple of monologues in there that feel very unearned and they go from emotionally 0 to 100 in about 15 seconds. And I've just got to the end of that scene and I'm like, I'm not here with you and it's not working and it didn't link to the last bit. And I found myself actually just kind of, I wasn't doing this, but if you were to imagine my mind just kind of like side cross-legged, looking at my nails, being like, yes, like where are we going? What's going on here? And my attention is kind of waning because I'm like, I'm just waiting for you to finish your emotional outburst. Until the near the end of the film, there is one scene, and if you've seen the film by now, you'll know the scene I mean, that really grabbed my attention, right? And it's a plot reveal, and it's a scene that's deeply sad and really impactful, and I felt my heart racing and that sort of lump in my throat, and I was like, God, this scene, all of a sudden, I'm like, it's grabbed hold of me, and it said, hey, like, this is where it's all going to, and I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. And so from that coming out of that scene, it's just such a shame that almost all of the film for me just didn't work. I've heard other people say that they actually liked other parts of the film but didn't like that scene. And I'm going, oh, it's the opposite for me. Most of the film felt like just wasn't there for me, but that scene was really good. And so I really thought when that scene happened, it was going to hard end on that reveal. And as an audience member, I very much had it understood. I understood what the plot had done. And I was like, I get it. I can fill in the blanks. I had everything I needed to piece the concept together. But the film doesn't end. It spends another 15 minutes not ending and just spoon-feeding every explanation to what had happened, even though I could kind of see exactly the dynamic. Obviously, I'm dancing around spoilers here. And to the point where the last shot of the film had me eye rolling, just thinking, yes, thank you. Yes, I know. You had a symbol, right? Super vague. You had a symbol that was visual to explain your explanation 15 minutes ago, which explained it. You then had another shot at the end to explain that symbol to the explanation. Right. So I had nothing to contribute to piecing it together coming out of the film. And I wasn't going back to earlier scenes going, like, of course. I'm just going, yeah. I guess that's how it goes. It made me think of the film Arrival, and I won't spoil Arrival, but the final scenes in Arrival, it's like an emotional discovery, right? And you can sort of see this. It's got its own palindrome-like structure that reveals itself to you, and it's kind of hiding in plain sight. And I think that reveal enriches your experience when you think of the earlier scenes, and it really works, and it's very powerful. So that was like something I feel like has done it just way better. Didn't give me anything to do with an audience member. So unfortunately, it's disappointing. I think within its hour and 40-minute runtime, I'm convinced there's a shit-hot 35-minute short in there, dare I say.
An episode of Black Mirror.
An episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah. Funny that. Huh. That is interesting. So it's directed by Garth Davis.
Garth Davis, who did Lion.
Did you like Lion? I liked Lion.
So here's the thing. I don't feel like I can give a good opinion on it. I saw Lion when I was in 2016 or 2017, and I was so ill. It was the last time I was ill, like properly bedridden for like 8 days.
Oh, God.
And so I was too ill to watch something. So I remember watching it and being like, ugh, but I was also just dead inside. So yes, I've seen it, but don't take what I've
fair enough. Here. But like he did that. And I was quite impressed by Lion. I quite liked it. I think some people were a bit harsh in it, but
yeah,
I quite liked
it. Got nominated for the Best Picture. Six nominations,
it got nominated
for,
like actors and stuff. And I don't know if it got nominated for Best Picture, but then he never really seemed to do something interesting after that. So when I saw he had made this, interesting cast.
Yeah,
look, so it's called Foe, again, just to reiterate for any listeners, but you know, those are two top tier actors right there.
Really?
Are they doing American accents?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
and the other guy, Terrence, is also played by Aaron Pierre, who's really good.
I mean, you want, obviously, it's great that they try to do something new and struck out and do some sci-fi as well. And like, at least it's a small film by the sounds of it, but it's frustrating when it doesn't quite come together.
And like the idea of scenes feeling superfluous is really irritating when like, it's only 100 minutes long. It feels longer than Killers of the Flower Moon when I'm watching it, because I'm just not, I don't feel like every scene is necessary. Also, just, it looks beautiful, but all of it was shot at golden hour. And so I'm going, all of this can't be happening at 5 a.m. every time.
Nah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there has to be, you got to pick and choose. You can't be like, golden hour, beautiful, us looking at each other through the trees. I'm like, yeah, it's very nice, but you can't, it doesn't make sense that this all happened at that part of the day.
I had the same thing when I watched Maestro, when I talked about last week, which is just that similar feeling of, again, 20 minutes in being like, oh, whoa, this is dead on the screen for me. And the very sort of script heavy, stage like manner, not coming alive, people doing big performances and you just feeling nothing.
You know, when you see it on TikTok, we see those like, it's like a scene from Seinfeld or Friends, and it's like how these very talented actors bring the stuff off the page, and you get to watch the scene as the script goes by. Mm. I felt like it was bad because I could see the lines of the script going because I just didn't jump off the page. Yeah. It's the opposite of that.
Oh, well.
It's a shame.
If you guys have seen Foe with Paul Mescal and Saoirse Ronan, then write in and let us know what you think. Be good, because it's got a small release. Be good to get some other opinions in.
I would genuinely love to. If there's something else that someone found irritating or that they didn't like that I didn't, that would be good to know. And then I'll try and keep it spoiler free for George in case he watches it.
I'd almost like to see a different film with Saoirse Ronan and Paul Mescal in. I mean, so I didn't see Foe, but like I'd love to see just like them, that pairing.
Or, you know,
let them be Irish.
Let them be Irish.
They're both Irish. Yeah. Two famous Irish actors.
I just saw that poster with them both like between two sheets, like resting on each other's hands in beautiful like colour. And I thought, oh yeah, I'm in. That's all I really need. For us, that's like an immediate sell. But just a bit of shame.
Mm. Okay, that was Foe.
George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent every single week? As always, guys, you can send in your thoughts, your questions, your concerns to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
Just like Bevan did.
Popkitchen podcast.
Just like...
Just kidding. I got confused.
Basically, I drifted off.
Yeah, you just woke it up.
Sorry, do it again.
.com.
Just like
Bevan did. Bevan writes into his own reveal now. Everyone knows it's Bevan.
Would you like me to do it again?
No, it's the we roll. We're live.
We're rolling. Live.
Bevan writes into the show with subject title Killers of the Flower Moon and says, hey, boys. Hope things are well.
Thanks, Bevan.
Hey, Bevan. We're good. How are you? I went to an advanced screening of Killers of the Flower Moon last week. Well, lucky Bevan. And I just think it's safe to say my life has been changed by Scorsese once again.
Wow.
This film will be studied for its incredible performances and insane cinematography. Rodrigo Pietro is the GOAT. Naturally, as expected, Leo delivers another 10 out of 10 performance. Watching his character develop from beginning to end was a joy to watch. And I found myself feeling so conflicted for feeling sorry for Ernest, even though he'd done so many morally wrong things. Mm. De Niro is obviously a superstar. Yeah. But if I'm honest, I think this is one of his greatest roles I've seen.
Mm.
Truly one of his most evil roles. Like this character, was wicked to the core, and De Niro knocks it out of the park. For me, the standout performance comes from Lily Gladstone. Mm. She is a master at work. As an actor, Martin Scorsese is one of the dream directors to work with. You can tell he is an actor's director. I just can't get over how good he is. Ha ha ha. Guys, if you didn't know, we reviewed Killers of the Flower Moon 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and then last week we put out a bonus spoiler podcast all about Killers of the Flower Moon. If you haven't heard those, please go and jump onto those now. Secondly, Bevan goes on to say, there's a film I'm hoping is getting a release in the UK, and that's Lies We Tell. It's a period drama slash thriller starring Agnes O'Casey as the central character. This story follows young Maud as she has to make decisions regarding her father's estate and how she deals with the repercussions of her choices. Shot in just 20 days for less than $500,000, the film creates incredible tension with equally incredible flair. Also, a film made me cry that's not necessarily a sad film is Billy Elliot.
We were talking about sad films, yeah.
I don't know why, but it always gets to me. All my love, your friend, Bevan. A scene that makes me sad, not to belabor the point, is the end scene of Arrival.
Yeah.
That's tragic, yeah. Without spoiling it. Yeah, it was really, really sad, the realization.
Whereas the ending of Billy Elliot is sad, but it's like happy sad. Sad.
Oh, yeah. It's a great ending.
Oh, yeah. The other good scene, Billy Elliot. Minor spoilers of Billy Elliot.
I think Billy
23 years
fine.
Ago,
yeah.
is when the dad goes back to the pit.
Oh,
he has to do it, and the son's
so
like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Go on, Billy. You were dancing, lad. Thank you, Bevan, for that email. Always good to hear from you. Next up,
we delay tactic from you because you've not got the... thank you, Bevan. Yes, yeah, always
and
great
And it would have worked if you hadn't have called it out. This email comes in from Piper, who says, hello, lads. Good morning. Piper here, friend of the show, writing in again. Been watching you guys for quite some time now and still get caught up on all your... And I think you meant to say still not caught up on all your episodes. Mm. And I'm a huge fan of your podcast. Really love hearing your takes on different forms of film and television and excited to see this podcast continue to grow.
Thank you.
Like Thank you, Piper. Subscribe. Thank you. Now onto the questions. Hopefully they are quick. First of it, being spooky season, have either of you ever dived into Mike Flanagan's horror anthology series on Netflix? The Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass, The Haunting of Bly Manor, etc. I always recommend one of them if someone is looking for a good scary, so I was interested to hear your thoughts if you've seen any of them, James?
No, but I'm...
What are you?
No, but I watched two episodes of The Fall of the House of Usher,
which is
also a Mike Flanagan project.
Right.
So... No, but yeah, well, maybe.
I've heard really good things, particularly about Midnight Mass. I've heard it was really creepy.
Yeah.
Secondly, in my first email, I did ask if you gents had any interest in seeing the Studio Ghibli film, The Boy and the Heron. I grew up obsessed with the Studio Ghibli and have been trying to give them a rewatch now as an adult. They are all beautiful films in their own ways, and I highly recommend diving in if you haven't already. Thanks again from being my film friends. Sending you crisp high fives from Arizona.
An editor I work with saw it at the London Film Festival, and he was like, oh yeah, it was good. So... I should go see it.
I mean, Studio Ghibli is one of those things I like and respect, but I always have loads of people coming to me being like, oh, I love it. And I'm like, yeah, I guess it's just it's a genre I haven't got into. I'm open to getting into, but I've just never begun the journey. I've seen Spirited Away and My Neighbor Totoro.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
People really stan it.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah. And I understand why it's important. And like, I see all the reasons, but it's like, I'm not there right now.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Piper, thank you for your email.
This next one is from Nathan, who writes in Kotfum opinions. Yes. He says, hello, boys.
That's Killers of the Flower Moon. Another one.
Yes. Nate from Colorado. I wrote to you about Killers of the Flower Moon. I write to you about Killers of the Flower Moon. Scorsese is my favorite filmmaker, and I was familiar with the story having read the book. The film is based for a college class about Native American history. Mm. This was easily my most anticipated film of the last several years. Just got out of the theater and have some opinions. This is a great film. Yeah. About 30 minutes into the film, there is an onset sense of dread that stays throughout the entire film, totally. The performances are stellar, and there are several images from the film that will stay with me. There aren't enough movies made that tell the story about horrors inflicted upon the indigenous people of my country, and I'm glad this small part of the story is getting told. I disagree with this film's portrayal of its protagonist, Ernest Burkhart. The film pretends that he has moral ambiguity, when in reality, he was a monster. Just a couple of spoilers there, which I'm trying to lift out. The decision to make Ernest the protagonist of the film required Scorsese to give him moral ambiguity. And for that reason, I think the story would be better told from the perspective of Molly and Tom White. That said, I hope Lily Gladstone wins the statue and was glad to see many of my favorite musicians getting to work as character actors. Mm. It's amazing Marta can do this at 18. We pray we get more from him. All the best, Nate. Yeah, there is an interesting gray area about how you leave the film and certain scenes about Leonardo DiCaprio's character. It's not a clean cut. He's not a clean cut character in any sense for me.
Yeah, although I'm not sure I would describe him as being morally ambiguous. I think what it is that he's
like a byproduct.
So basically,
of his environment.
He is not as he's not like Robert De Niro's character, or even the
he's not calculated really.
Or even his brother Byron's character in being someone you could easily pick out and go, that guy is evil. He is bad. I don't think it's ambiguous actually that Ernest is a bad person, but I think that's the kind of point, is that it's you. Yes, you have the people you can easily identify as villains, yeah, like De Niro and Byron. But with the thing with Ernest is that he is a different kind of menace, a different kind of evil, which is someone who is dim, easily manipulated,
with influence and power.
So he's got male privilege, given a huge amount of power and responsibility, but not the intelligence to question himself, not the self-awareness. Mm. And it's like that kind of brutal, blunt ignorance that is delivering what he's doing. And I think that I never thought that I understand the idea that they've tried to give him more dimensions to make him more compelling as a character on screen. I do see that there, but I do think that is Scorsese making a point about a different kind of evil in a way. A different
he also
kind
represents
of
in a lot of ways a kind of everyman. He's come out of the war with an injury, comes to a new land where there's all this money and oil, but no one really knows how the dynamic works, and he's been given to someone like Robert De Niro, who's able to easily manipulate to do terrible things.
It's like Robert De Niro's a character you can kind of fear, whereas Leo's character is almost just like repugnant because of his just lack of sense and backbone and against something so obviously horrible. That's how I kind of feel.
Thank you very much for your email, Nathan. On to Holden.
And some more Killers of the Flower Moon correspondence from Holden, who says, "Hi guys, second time writing in. I love the pod so much. Went to see Killers of the Flower Moon last night with a friend and I can't stop thinking about it. Obviously long, but worth every second. Anyway, my question pertains to something you mentioned towards the end of your spoiler review. The choice of when..." This isn't a spoiler, I don't believe, in this email.
Yeah.
"The choice of when to include subtitles in the film. I question the choice primarily during a scene where there are doctors in Ernest and Molly's home. I really had to use context clues to figure out what was happening. Yet in some other scenes, subtitles were used for, frankly, information that didn't seem as pertinent to understand. I am wondering if you've ever encountered other movies with this on and off choice of subtitles, and what is your reaction here? I came away treating this choice as a device to distance the viewer, predominantly non-Osage viewer, from the characters in the story. As a white North American 22-year-old girl from the 21st century, I'm not entitled to claim complete comprehension of the Osage people's experiences and stories. And I think the film and the question of subtitles rightfully puts the viewer at a point of tension between learning about the Osage people while also forcing to recognize their inherent distance from it." Oh, great.
That's great.
Really good point, Holden.
The first thing that came to mind weirdly was, did The Revenant do that as well? But I don't know if it's a decision to like omit subtitles to the audience more, that like passing things are just not said.
I tell you what, you mentioned The Revenant. Watching The Killers of the Flower Moon made me just realize how kind of flat and one-dimensional the whole whispery, woman in the breeze, my Native American wife.
The flashback and the woman turning her head towards the camera. Yeah,
and like,
totally.
There's similar moments of fantasy and fantasia in Killers of the Flower Moon, one particular moment. But I think that works really well.
It's really nice to leave. We're clearly gushing about it. It's really nice to leave a screening watching Killers of the Flower Moon and come out of it thinking, God, that story really needed to be told. Because you don't see that story being told. Like, God, what an essential piece of storytelling.
Yeah, what a blank.
So glad it's
in
there.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting point. I think that the first time I realized that he's not using subtitles is very early on. Even De Niro speaks to some of the characters and you don't see it. And I'm like, I like it. Like, you're looking over the shoulder of characters.
Mm. Calvin writes in with another note about Killers of the Flower Moon, says, "I saw Killers of the Flower Moon last Thursday in IMAX. I thought it was brilliant. Mm. Like George, I found myself comparing it to Oppenheimer, but I wasn't quite sure why until I listened to your episode on it. I thought that Killers of the Flower Moon is a better film in almost every way. The characters had so much more depth to them. I felt that the 3.5-hour runtime flew by, while Oppenheimer really seemed to drag at points, despite being almost 30 minutes shorter." Just on this, I mean, like, you and I saw it and were very, we had a really good time with it, and we commented on its length. Again, go to our spoiler review and our main review. And I think, am I fair to say that critics have loved the film and audiences have been slightly mixed on it?
I think it's still early, too early to tell with
audiences.
It's still just come out.
As in, it's a film that I've really loved, and some of the sentiment I've seen online hasn't all been glowing. I've seen some people say, I've seen some people saying, oh, it's too long,
but that's
very indulgent.
That's awesome, like,
It's not unanimously loved.
But also, what are people saying about the film that they didn't like?
I agree with.
And a lot of people's criticism is that it's too long. I'm like, okay, get past that. That's why I've liked the emails we've read today, because it's with genuine.
Oh, really? It's so smart.
Yeah, thank you, people.
Not to say you're dumb if you don't like
it. I don't know. I thought there was a good reaction to it.
Same, but I hear and see the other side.
Just on the Oppenheimer comparison, yeah, I have thought about that. I think fundamentally I just see it as like Oppenheimer is a good film, but Killers of the Flower Moon is a great film. That's how I feel about it. I think that Scorsese, the brilliance of Killers of the Flower Moon is that like a captain of a huge ship is able to steer it with such prowess and elegance that you just don't feel the kind of weight of it.
Like an expensive car, the suspension takes all the bumpiness.
Because he is
the
so skilled and the whole thing is so well crafted, it just moves and you don't unaware that it's an unwieldy beast.
I'm just picturing Scorsese in a pirate hat at the wheel.
Okay.
You're off in the crow's nest.
Starboard a little bit here. Yeah, thank you. Whereas something like Oppenheimer, which is great, and you are aware always of the size of the beast. You are always aware that if that's a ship, you can hear it kind of growling and winding and under pressure and under stress. You can you can really feel the beast. I personally like it when you
don't even know you're watching it.
I think fundamentally that's the difference between a great and a good film and a great filmmaker and a good filmmaker. I'm sorry. Let's end with a non-Killers of the Flower Moon email from Megan, who says, who's in an email entitled, Mr. Pulp and Mr. Kitchen, my letterbox challenge update.
Nice.
Hello, Mr. Pulp and Mr. Kitchen. You may remember me from my email in episode 90, which I wrote while listening to episode 23. And I'm now all caught up. Wow. So in 8 weeks, you caught up on 75 weeks of episodes.
Oh, good on you. And maybe by like episode 123, she'll be listening to episode 99.
I stated that my goal was to log 250 films on Letterboxd in 2023.
That is insane. Can we just acknowledge that's not insane. That's a real achievement.
And at the time, I was around the 150 mark. Well, I'm now up to 220 and it's looking like I'll exceed my goal.
Wow.
Then she says something that I think is important. She says, I have to clarify that these are not all new watches. Okay. Now, I don't count that.
See.
There's the annual Harry Potter rewatch.
Right.
There's Bridesmaids whenever it's on TV. So that's at least three times this year so far.
Yeah.
And I've also been trying to get into short films more. Mm-hmm. My favorites being Two Cars, One Night by Taika Waititi. That is a really good short film.
Oh, I should say.
Yeah. And Curve by Tim Egan, which are obviously bumping up the total quickly with their shorter runtimes. But between 150 and 200 films a year has been my norm since around 2017 when I really got interested in film.
I'll allow shorts to bump up
the list. Yeah. My favourite watches of the year so far have been Boy by Taika Waititi. Yes, I've mentioned that so many times in the show. Great, great film. The Dressmaker by Jocelyn Moorhouse and Fresh by Mimi Cave. Yeah, I reviewed Fresh last year. I was quite disappointed by it, but that's the one with Sebastian Stan in it and Daisy Jones. I'd be interested to see if any of your listeners have logged in a similarly ridiculous number of films to me. Yeah, that's good. If you're a Letterboxd user and you're listening and you think you have watched the most amount of films this year.
Yeah.
Give us your numbers.
Give us your
numbers.
Break
we
down.
We could do a league table.
And
top
be honest,
10.
Break down some of the ways in which you've, you know, probably had to cheat to get up there. Like shorts, rewatches.
Shortcuts. I don't count rewatches.
When I did count them, I didn't count rewatches and I got close to 100. But if I was counting rewatches, I would have exceeded 100.
The most I've ever done is 140 in 2020.
For obvious reasons. Yeah.
And then because of the amount of time the show has taken up, and past years
ironically
slightly diminished.
The film podcast you now do means you can't watch as many films.
Megan goes on to say, if you recall, I listed one of my favourite films as Denis Villeneuve's Incendies, pronounced in French,
Incendie,
which was his last French language Quebecois film before Prisoners and the resulting meteoric rise of my favourite director working today. I would love as many people as possible to see this incredible film, but I believe if seen by a wider audience would be up there with the best of Villeneuve's work.
You sold me.
Incendies focuses on two stories, a mother in the past living through an unnamed Levantine conflict and her twins in the present day Canada who travel to their mother's homeland to uncover their heartbreaking past. I referenced the chilling opener in my last email, the use of Radiohead's You and Who's Army during the opening scene of buzzing a child's hair in a room full of child soldiers. It's bone chilling and I encourage you to watch this clip alone on YouTube to entice you to watch this incredibly underseen masterpiece. For me, it would fall into the category of love it, but could never see it again, along with Requiem for a Dream and Mother. However, it is so beautifully shot. It doesn't pull its punches, and with its raw storytelling, it hits you right in the gut so many times that I simply have to rewatch it time and time again. Would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I think the only reason to rewatch Mother is to show it to somebody who hasn't seen it and watch them watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the fun of it. Sure. And lie to them, be like, oh yeah, you got to watch Mother.
I don't know if there's something sort of twisted about me, but I've rewatched Requiem for a Dream loads of times. I like the kind of I like the roller coaster descent into hell that it is.
Yeah.
Loving the podcast, having binged all episodes in around 3 months.
Nice.
You've just gotten better and better. And whilst I've already converted my family to the Pulp Kitchen crew, I will still be crediting you for providing endless entertainment as I create the family Christmas quiz.
Ooh.
Heavily influenced by your fantastic games. As always, sirens on our end. Glad I've caught up, but sad I can now only listen to you in weekly doses.
Oh.
Megan in Lancaster. Megan, a great email there. I'm going to add on my letterbox right now, that's on my watch list.
It'd be really sad if she was like, I've listened to you in 3 months and honestly, guys, getting worse.
Yeah.
Stop talking over each other.
Oh, yeah. Where's
the food gone?
On Letterboxd, Incendies has 4.4. Oh, that's very, very high.
That's high.
Yeah, I'm adding that to my watch list now. Thank you, Megan.
George's Incendie.
Incendie.
Guys, thank you so much. Thank you very much for sending in your emails this week. We love to read them out. If you want to have your email read out on the show, you can send them in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com and we'll be reading them out. But guys, don't forget, next week is episode 100 and we are asking you to send in voice notes. You can do this on Instagram or you can send us a voice note over email. That works. I've seen someone do it. Send them in. Be a part of the show.
You've seen someone do
it. We've got one. Someone sent a voice note over email.
Great.
Oh, yeah, it's possible. Guys, some of them have already been really good. I am very much looking forward to hearing your questions on the show. It's going to be great. Send them in. It is now Wednesday when you are listening to this, assuming I get the episode out on time, which I will. Get them in before Saturday. We're recording episode 100 on Saturday.
Just don't overthink it. It's just a voice note. Send it in. We're not going to laugh or anything. We generally want to hear from you.
I already had friends of the show send in. And I was like, oh, they have a voice.
Yeah.
Not just a name.
They're actually spoken. Friends.
Yes, they have spoken. Shall we end with a game?
I'd love to.
George, as always, Pop Kitchen ends
with a game.
With a game. Today, we're sort of playing a game. It's a new thing. We've kind of done it before, but not really. It's part game, part deep psychological exercise.
Oh, okay.
Now, I know what everyone thinks. Podcasts, you spend time preparing your thoughts, deeply calculated. I want to see George on the spot. I don't want to see him preparing. I want to know exactly what he thinks before he knows he has to think it.
But that's every week.
No, today it's going to be more intense. So I want to know what you really think on a quickfire basis about films, directors, characters. So I'm going to do a very quick sort of this one or this one, and you have to say in quickfire which one you prefer.
Do I have to say why?
No.
Okay.
So I've said ketchup or mayonnaise?
Mayonnaise,
actually. Yeah, that's the speed. That's probably as long as you can take.
Okay.
Right? It's got three rounds of this.
God, I'm nervous.
You have to tell me what you prefer. Ready? Okay, George, quick fire. What do you prefer? 3, 2, 1. Friends or Seinfeld?
Friends, actually.
Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction?
Pulp Fiction.
Ridley Scott or James Cameron?
Ridley Scott.
Arrival or Interstellar?
Interstellar.
Paddington 2 or Toy Story 3?
Toy Story 3.
Paul Mescal or Timothy Chalamet?
Paul Mescal.
Before Sunset or Boyhood?
Before Sunset.
Pizza or burgers?
Pizza.
Stanley Kubrick or Francis Ford Coppola?
Stanley Kubrick.
Men in Black or Ghostbusters?
Men in Black.
Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul?
Better Call Saul.
Lady Gaga or Justin Timberlake?
Gaga.
Monsters, Inc. or Monsters University?
Monsters, Inc.
Robin Williams or Jim Carrey?
Robin Williams or Jim Carrey? Jim Carrey. Tough.
Some interesting ones.
Good matches
there.
Yeah. I'm going to get burned alive for saying Friends is better than Seinfeld. Or saying I prefer it.
And that's exactly why it's on there.
James. I feel a bit like it's a bit honest there. Also, James Cameron and Ridley Scott is hard because James Cameron's made fewer films.
Yeah.
But I also think his record's better.
So you'll notice some of them I paired because they're similar, but also some of them I paired because they're different. And then I just thought actors who are musicians, I thought Lady Gaga or Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, I like that.
I assume you were rating them in the context of their film careers.
No,
or was it just
all gut,
over?
All gut.
Right, you've got round two of this.
Okay.
Ready? George, very quick fire. You have to tell me which one you prefer. Ready? 3, 2, 1. The Force Awakens or Top Gun Maverick?
Force Awakens, I've seen it more times.
Barbie or Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer.
Tim Burton or Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson.
Jake Gyllenhaal or Ryan Gosling?
Gillen?
No, Gosling.
The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi?
Sorry, it's Return of the Jedi.
No, actually, it's Empire Strikes Back.
Roger Deakins or Emmanuel Lubezki?
Emmanuel Lubezki.
A Negroni or a cup of tea?
It has to be a cup of tea.
Javier Bardem or Pedro Pascal?
Javier Bardem.
Ice Cube or Ludacris?
Ice Cube.
Jared Leto or Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Bacon.
So sure. Shia LaBeouf or Mark Wahlberg?
Wahlberg.
Last one. Harrison Ford or Tom Cruise?
Harrison Ford.
Oh, interesting.
Because he's got more, both long-term actors who've got a lot of variety in their career, but I just feel like I think he's got a depth of wisdom in Harrison Ford.
Tom Cruise isn't a human.
I feel like I could sit across from a table from Harrison Ford.
Tom Cruise.
And just about manage. But with Tom Cruise, he is the room.
I like Seth Rogen's bit where he was like, I was given an option to have Tom Cruise tell me about Scientology, but I was slightly concerned that I wouldn't be able to resist and that like I would be a doctor. Yeah, when they reveal that all the people of power are lizards, Tom Cruise will definitely be one of them.
I mean, if it's true, I don't want this going out.
Last round. Are you enjoying it?
I am, but I'm worried I'm going to get burned alive.
You don't know what you've said. That's...
I think people are going to be like, listen to this basic mayonnaise guy. White bread, cookie cutter, nonsense.
Last round. George.
It's very personal, this quiz.
It is, you know?
I need to do the same for you because I feel like...
It's better to not have to over-explain.
You do realise these videos will be used by people to either follow or unfollow us. Yes. And they'll go, oh, Empire Strikes Back, really?
That guy. Mm. George, quick fire. Tell me which you prefer. In 3, 2, 1. Guillermo del Toro or Paul Thomas Anderson?
Thomas Anderson.
Jamie Foxx or Will Smith?
Will Smith?
Daniel Kaluuya or Robert Pattinson?
Robert Pattinson.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Hanks.
Black Swan or Her?
Black Swan.
Thor or the Hulk?
Hulk in terms of like, he's more iconic.
Ari Aster or Robert Eggers?
Robert Eggers.
Cheese or chocolate?
Cheese.
James McAvoy or Michael Fassbender?
Michael Fassbender.
Star-Lord or Tony Stark?
Star-Lord.
Michael Bay or Roland Emmerich?
Roland Emmerich.
Rowan Atkinson or Hugh Laurie?
Rowan Atkinson.
Whiplash or The Prestige?
Quick. Prestige.
Last one. Marriage Story or Call Me By Your Name?
Marriage Story.
I hope everyone appreciates that I put one food in every single round.
The Negroni and tea one was really hard.
Yeah, that was the hardest.
Do you know
one.
My own? I bought my own vermouth the other day and Campari and stuff, and like I got a nice bottle of vermouth. I've made
you bloody love a Negroni,
and they're so easy to make. Yeah. So easy that now when I go out, I'm like I can't order one because they're so easy to make.
Yeah,
but I've got it lovely. I've got the cup.
I remember learning to make it in a bottle. I was like, that's it.
But it's really nice.
I can't stand them.
Why?
I know we've had this discussion before. I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
They're lovely. They're sort of sweet but sour but bitter but warm but
gross. Yeah. I remember making it for the first time when I learned cocktails
James,
in the pub.
I've seen the amount of ketchup you put on something. That is
That's got nothing to do with the Negroni. I tried it. And I was just like, I remember seeing ingredients that were like, it was like a kid had been loose with like the chemicals.
No, I like how restrained it is. Three ingredients.
No, I just can't get it. It's not weird to dislike Negronis. A lot of people are a bit of a Marmite drink.
No, it's also like it's you dislike a drink. It's not that weird. If you said you dislike, if you told me you don't drink water, I'd find that weird.
Oh, yeah, they'd be dead.
I know people who are like just I've never. My old company, my boss was like in his 60s. I never saw him have a glass of water.
What did he drink? Coffee.
Coffee, tea, juice. No, not even juice. Coffee or tea.
But did he say, I don't like the taste of water?
I said to him, I never see you drink a glass of water. And he was like, oh, yeah. He was like, oh, just don't. I think it's a generational thing. I think because water used to be shit. And I don't think you could just drink.
We all have water bottles now that we take out with us. Yeah. More water conscious.
Coddled we are. Coddled. Sucking on the teat of water bottles.
I want to try those. It's not sponsored, but it's like you put water in your thing and then the nozzle is flavored, but it's just a smell thing.
Right.
So it's not actually like putting sugar in your water. Apparently it's good.
No,
apparently
why would you want flavored water? Because then I would think, oh, great, this is a soft drink. And
if you want to reach out and prove George wrong, please send us or whatever that company is that makes the flavored smell water. Get in touch.
I feel a bit
exposed with those answers. I feel like I've been.
You don't even know what you said.
I feel like I've come
suggested.
Out of the shower and you've immediately like sprung.
Standing blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I feel a bit naked and I'm worried. Don't judge me on my answers, guys.
You don't even remember what you said.
No, I don't remember what I said, really.
How did you like the pairings? Did you enjoy them?
They're pretty. I don't know about the Prestige and Whiplash. I just don't associate.
They were meant to be random.
I think
they're
if you said Whiplash and Black Swan, that would have been better.
I put them down as two films which I know you think are great.
The Prestige. I think the reason I paused,
that was the only thing I put
the reason it. I paused was because I've seen The Prestige more times and I love it, but Whiplash I've seen more recently, but really it's The Prestige, which someone said the other day was overrated and wrote to the
I know
show.
I know
I had to wash my hands afterwards.
It's terrible.
No, but actually it's been 5 years since the last was The Prestige, so who knows, I might watch it soon and go, James, all sure. those hats, load of nonsense.
I think that I know you and I both love Jim Carrey, but Robin Williams to me is also right up there.
Yeah, of course,
he's brilliant. I saw a great clip of him doing a branded ad. And they're trying to get Robin Williams to deliver three lines, but he just keeps sketching internally.
Watched, so basically,
and it's inside the actor studio is amazing. If you've ever seen it, go watch it.
I'm in the process of I'll talk about this on a bonus at some point. Basically, I've never watched Friends all the way through.
Right,
ever in my life. I've seen sporadic episodes. I'm a bit like how you are with The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sporadic.
You've probably seen...
You've seen a lot of The Simpsons, but not since you were a kid, right?
Sure.
And that was like me. So I decided to watch
ever
it.
Watched Friends through.
No, never all the way through. So that's what I've been doing over the past like 6 months.
Mm.
And I will give my feedback on that in a bonus episode at some point.
Could you be any more elusive with that?
Yeah, great. But I just watched the episode with Billy Crystal and Robin Williams where they're in it. Do you remember?
Yes,
it's the cold open.
Yeah.
But it's like, obviously Billy Crystal, hilarious as well, but the two of them together and Robin Williams is just such fun, like so alive. And it's like for the 2 minutes that they're on screen, the show stops. Friends is no longer on. Like the whole illusion is kind of broken or kind of transcended. You're no longer in a sitcom.
Yeah.
The show doesn't exist. These aren't characters.
William
it's just this
show.
Kind of exciting fire in the middle here. And it's all worth it. Because it's so entertaining just seeing those two there almost just shy of taking the piss.
Yeah.
They're so much bigger than the show is.
Yeah.
But they're there. And I just find it like a really weird, like, because Friends is such a big show, such a big phenomenon. But then you have this like even bigger presence come in, these two actors together.
Titans.
And then walk off. And I'm like, wow, it was like someone paused the show for a bit.
Yeah.
And then resumed it. Yeah. Anyway.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pop Kitchen. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. It is next week will be our 100th episode, which is crazy.
We've got 99 episodes, but the problems are
numerous.
But we've got one. Yeah. Next year, we hit three digits next week, people.
Guys, don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
How could you forget?
How could you forget?
And please continue to like, subscribe, follow us on social media.
You were like a pastor. Follow us.
I've got to change the delivery every so often because people will get so
the
used
Church
to it.
Church of the Latter Day.
If you could follow us, please, on the please follow us and engage, like, subscribe, comment, send it to your friends, add it to your story. We really, really appreciate it. And it does keep us going. Thank you.
Like and subscribe. YouTube has updated itself, whereas now when we say like and subscribe, the like and subscribe buttons glow automatically.
Wow.
So like and subscribe. Is your YouTube glowing if you're watching on YouTube? I know not everyone is, but isn't that cool?
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Do you know what's really cool? 100 episodes.
100 episodes.
See you next week.